ball. Cause I got a good feeling and I don't feel no pain at all. Riding my day.
Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on Nova M Radio. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Right before the program, it was announced that the state of Kentucky, for the first time in a number of years, has executed somebody in their death chamber. This guy was declared dead about half an hour ago. This is a problem that I'm having with this. I'm against the death penalty, but this guy was convicted of killing two children and then stabbing their mother and sister about 6 years ago. And whenever I hear of someone who has raped and murdered or murdered children, I find that my resistance to the death penalty disappears. Now I have a problem with that because it shows a lack of consistency to me on my part. If you are anti-death penalty, you're anti-death penalty, right? And there should be no exceptions. Isn't that correct? Isn't that how it works? You're anti-death penalty. Except in the case of children. I don't know why I mentioned this. I had no plan on mentioning it, but I heard it on the news right before the program. When I heard it, I thought, good. I'm glad he's dead. Maybe it's because I'm a parent of, once again, a little kid, but I don't know. Weird. I'm kind of stuck on that now. This was at Bart Cop's website, and somebody sent it to me. It's a quote from a blogger. And Bart Kopp put it on his website. Here's the quote. The reference is to talking to Republicans or conservatives. Well, not conservatives. There's some conservatives that I still like and respect. I mean Republicans who are just off the cliff. I mean, they're Republicans in this country might as well, I don't know, they might as well just gather together in three or four states and squat there and let the rest of the world get on with serious business. But this is about Republicans. The blogger writes, there's no point to debating the lunatic fringe, their rantings about Marxism and Islamofascism and un-Americanism and treason and laissez-faire economics are irrelevant to any serious political discussion in this country. Arguing with people who think Obama is a secret Muslim communist or that the earth is only 6,000 years old is pointless. It's like debating a child, or more accurately, debating a male Labrador retriever. No matter what you say, he'll continue to hump your leg, knowing with certainty that if he just humps long enough, your shoes will bear puppies. Well, I find that very funny. I really do, and it's true. It is pointless. I've discovered this some time ago that there's no point in talking with Republicans. Nothing is accomplished. They have no ideas. They can't make a coherent point without either referring to terrorism or Reagan. Their party is notorious in the past 75, 80 years for being just total reactionary freaks who have been death to the middle class, death to the working class. They're devoid of any ideas. What they do is chatter like little monkeys. And if you want to understand just how bad the chatter is, if you can stomach it, turn on Sean Hannity someday. Oh, my God. His radio program. Just turn it on and see how much of it you can handle. But, yeah, the reference to a male Labrador retriever, that's pretty good. Just keeps humping your leg, knowing full well that it's going to produce, your shoe is going to have puppies. Ah! The Sarah Palin turkey slaughter video is really getting an awful lot of attention, isn't it? The YouTube website now has just tens of thousands of hits on this thing. We were talking before the show, if she ever runs for any public office ever again, anywhere on earth, whoever she's running against need only drag out some of that video and put it up there. And that doofus in the background, I kept trying to figure out, what is this guy turning around while he's holding a chicken in the cone of death, or a turkey, down in that cone of death, and he keeps turning around looking at Sarah. What is he looking at? Is he looking at her ass? Is he just glad to be on TV? Obviously he can't hear what she's saying, because that machine is just breaking the turkey's neck in about 9 different places and relieving the turkey of all of its body fluids. But that guy keeps turning around with that dung-eating grin on his face. Where did that, I know who that guy is. He, at one point, when I lived in the backwoods outside of Raleigh, North Carolina, that guy lived right down the road. And when I lived outside of Tampa 40 years ago, that guy lived right down the road. And when I lived in Savannah, Georgia, and used to travel outside of Savannah, that guy, I went by his house many times. And you know what I'm saying? And one time when my car broke down in Cullman, Alabama, and I had to spend 3 or 4 days there waiting for an alternator, I met that guy over and over and over again. How in the hell did he get to Alaska? It's incredible. There he was.
Yeah, hot damn. That's the governor. Boy, she got a good ass, doesn't she?
Oh, man. So I get this email from Roxanne in Reseda. She thinks it all looks and feels like a bad Fellini film that you were watching while you were on bad acid. She said, I would know, been there, did that. Sarah Palin and killing as a backdrop. Bizarro, creepy world. No more turkey sandwiches in bed here. It's not just the crazy bitch Palin, but more about this really weird world we're living in. Rox writes, things seem to be more strange than usual these days. Is it just me? Maybe I need a medication adjustment. I'll go to my local medical marijuana dispensary first thing tomorrow. Thank you. Peace and love to all. Rox and Reseda. Oh, yeah. I know. It is. It's just, there's something insane on the loose, isn't it? When you see stuff like that. Oh, my God. Also got an email here from Doc, who I haven't heard from for a while. Interesting idea about a bailout plan for the auto industry, which I think is a good plan. And also an email from Diane. She sent me about what General Motors plans to do with $1 billion of the money that they're going to get from you and me. They're going to invest in operations in Brazil. And also an email from Lauren about how not bailing out the auto companies would be a big mistake. So we're going to do those. Then we're going to take some phone calls. Oh, by the way, it's official for our listeners in San Francisco Bay Area. The station out there, Green 960, is bringing me out 2 weeks from tonight is the program. This is the quickie. December 5th at 7 p.m., go to green960.com. To get information, it's real cheap. the ticket, but you better get one real fast because this is going to sell out pretty quickly, I think. So check it out, greensign960.com. We'll be right back.
Over the river and through the woods, now Grandma's cabin fine. Hooray for fun, the pudding's done. Hooray for the pumpkin pie. Over the river.
Twenty-one past the hour. I guess we're just going to work this turkey thing to death, so to speak, right, Kathy? All right.
You can come up and pet the turkey if you want to.
Come up and pet the turkey if you want to. Okay. All right. Regarding the bailout for the auto industry, Doc writes in, Mike, here's another interesting idea. He writes, I think it's been proven over and over again that if we just hand $25 or $50 billion over to General Motors, the money will all go to the fat cats at the top to fly around in their private jets and get $20,000 massages at the Four Seasons Resort. Instead, why not have the government, and we talked about this the other night, why not have the government buy a controlling interest, say 65% in GM stock? At less than $3 a share, which is the current price, that would cost us $1 to $1.5 billion. Then give those shares to the workers of General Motors and immediately call a shareholders meeting. They would then elect their own board of directors and likely force out the current managers, the MBA paper pushers who got them into this mess because they know nothing about the auto industry, and replace them with people from their own ranks, people who understand the ins and outs of making cars. Then the workers all have a stake in making sure that their company is making the best products possible, integrating new technology and building cars that people want to buy, all the while saving us taxpayers a cool $24 billion. What do you think, Doc? I think as one option, or as out of all the options out there, I think that's probably the best one. I really do. Again, when I watch those three, I'm really conflicted about this because I understand about the workers. I do, and the tangential businesses that will just be absolutely murderized, as the Three Stooges used to say. Well, actually, it was Curly. Was it Curly or was it Moe that used to say that? Oh, well. So many businesses, small businesses, will be murderized if the auto industry shuts down in Detroit or these companies go bankrupt. So of all the options that might be available, I think ownership by the workers would be a great idea. Now, Diane sent in, this is from the Latin American Bureau of the International Herald Tribune, which is actually the international edition of the New York Times, to a certain extent. The headline is, General Motors to invest $1 billion in Brazil operations, money to come from U.S. rescue program. And what it says is General Motors plans to invest $1 billion in Brazil to avoid the kind of problems the U.S. automaker is facing in its home market. That's according to General Motors, the president of GM Brazil, Jaime Ardia, says the funding will come from the package of financial aid that the manufacturer will receive from the U.S. government, and will be used to, quote, complete the renovation of the line of products up to 2012, end quote. Mr. Ardila went on to say, quote, it wouldn't be logical to withdraw the investment from where we're growing, and our goal is to protect investments in emerging markets, end quote. Now, this statement was published in the Brazilian business daily Gazeta Mercantil. It's just It's just kind of weird. Now, you know this guy, the head of GM Brazil, is not going to make a statement like that unless he's had conversations with the board of directors of General Motors here in the United States, the parent company. So to General Motors in the United States, it's a fait accompli. The money is already in the bank. They're already spending it. It doesn't make any difference what the Congress said the other day with all the snotty remarks and the all deserved. And the irony of these guys showing up, the executives in their private jets and yada, yada, yada. And the further irony of sitting there asking for $25 billion, and when questioned about how it would be spent, when is it needed, what's the downside, what's the upside, they sit there like dumbasses with not an answer. They can't answer anything. Except, you know, about whether or not they would take a cut in pay. Well, I think I'm okay where I'm at. Yeah, well, I would think so. At $21 million a year, yeah, that's kind of okay. That's almost as much as Limbaugh makes. So, this is a part that is so pissy. It's just, how can you not be angry when you find out what Diane sent me, that here they are in Brazil, telling their counterparts in Brazil, yo, hey, the money's coming, don't worry, we just have to get past these smart asses on these various committees, but the money will be there. We're going to get $15 billion, a billion goes down to you guys. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We're going to make sure that Brazilian operation is clicking right along so that when we do close the operations here in North America, well, you know, we got some place to go, right? We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
And if you complain, ain't no one gonna care that I walked off with all the loot. I'm just keeping up a grand tradition called the golden parachute. Yeah, making all those executive decisions almost wore me out, you see. I've been your master and lord, and this is my reward for all that responsibility. Retirement, I'll try it. I'll slip away real quiet. I ain't looking for no horn to toot. If it's fair for GE, honey, it's fair for me. Give me my golden parachute. Yeah, if it's fair for AT&T, then honey, it's fair for me to get this big old golden parachute.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Twenty-five before the hour. All right, from Lauren regarding the bailout of the auto industry. Lauren writes, occasionally an issue comes up that smacks me with its poignancy and potential heartbreak, and usually I'm 100% with you on your analyses of the tragedies unfolding around us. But, Mike, be deeply suspicious of the right-wing talking points that are ridiculing the CEOs of this industry. Congress didn't mock the oil company executives, or those from Halliburton, did they? Funny how the only fully unionized workforce is getting demonized, isn't it? We can't let the economy go into free fall. I think of the battered wives, the child abuse, the suicides. Please read this letter, and hopefully all 12 of your listeners, really there must be a few more, will join me in demanding that no more manufacturing industries go out of business in this country. The lives of millions of Americans are at stake in this one. Lauren. Well, that's, you know, like I said, that's precisely the conflict that I have about it. I have been watching some little, and not very much coverage, maybe 2.5-3 minutes on the evening news about local businesses in Detroit that are not auto industry directly related, but are indirectly related because businesses where auto workers go for this or that, you know, shopping or haircut or beauty parlor or auto parts store or restaurant, what have you. And, yeah, it would be horrible, just horrible. Last time Kathy and I were in Detroit was about 7 years ago. 8 years ago when we went up there to work out a deal with the UAW on IE America Radio. And, you know, that lasted, well, how long did we work for IE America? About 2 years, 3 years maybe, two or three, two and a half. And we drove through just west of downtown Detroit along was it Woodruff Avenue? I think it was Woodruff Avenue. And the neighborhoods out there, huge, literal mansions that were built probably around the turn of the 20th century, into the 20th century, 1910, 1920, 1930, boarded up. Just house after house after house. Some of them, the boards had been pried off. You could tell it was being used either a crack house or a whorehouse or what have you. But these beautiful old stone homes, I don't know, it looked like something out of a Rod Serling episode of Twilight Zone. They're totally abandoned. Nobody there. House after house, block after block. And we drove into that particular neighborhood and just drove around, which was probably not a very smart thing to do, because it really was. It did look like it was totally out of control of any kind of city authority, completely. It was pretty bad. And these were beautiful old homes. Oh my God, abandoned, windows smashed out. Some of them had the big picture windows in front boarded up. Some didn't. Huge oaken doors hanging, I'm assuming they were made out of oak, hanging on their hinges. It was really, really scary to see that. Especially since, like I said, Detroit to me was always, when I was a kid growing up, kind of like a Bethlehem to a Christian or Mecca to a Muslim or Jerusalem to a Jew. You know, to me it was Detroit. Oh my God, Detroit? Wow. So what to do? What to do? Let me get to tonight's business report from our economic correspondent, Prairie 2, who asked a question in the subject line, is he back from the dark side? He's referring to Timothy Geithner. Mike, there's a disturbing rumor in the press that Timothy Geithner, president of the New York Federal Bank, has been tapped for Secretary of the Treasury. He began his career working for Henry Kissinger and was an undersecretary of the Treasury for both Robert Rubin and Larry Summers. From there, he went to the Council on Foreign Relations and then to the IMF before taking over the New York Fed 5 years ago. He is considered an expert on Asian trade, and he speaks fluent Chinese. The New York Fed Bank's primary function is debasing the currency. Most of the trillions handed out in the past year came through Geithner. The strategy that Franklin Roosevelt used when he hired Joe Kennedy to run the SEC was, quote, it takes a crook to catch one, end quote. Perhaps Obama is subscribing to this principle. Unless Geithner has come back from the dark side, this isn't change we can believe in. Meanwhile, back at the collapse of the economy, because of some large loan defaults, the cost of insuring commercial mortgages that was already at crippling high rates has quadrupled in the past 2 weeks, going past 8%. That's not the interest on the mortgage. That's just the insurance. Corporate bonds have lost 24% of their value in November so far, a decline three times the worst ever drop. The benchmark corporate bond fund has fallen to 53 cents on the dollar, and at that price, investors are assuming 100% failure of corporate bonds based on half the normal default recovery rate. Does that make sense to you? News from the Iowa caucus. Mike Huckabee has started his 2012 campaign. Officially, he's on book tour, How to Cook a Squirrel, but he's using a campaign bus, and he's drawing crowds. Oh, and save some cans of cranberry sauce as flocks of gigantic mutant turkeys are expected to roam the plains in a post-apocalyptic America. P.S. Regarding, excuse me, regarding turning the auto companies over to the workers, Republicans in Congress would set themselves on fire and charge the podium if that were ever put to a vote. Joe Sixpack is a genius if he can be trained to repeat Republican talking points. but not when it comes to doing his job, you know, something he actually knows something about. You can't have that. That's communism or democratism or somethingism. Now just forget about that and run down to the company store and buy another six-pack on credit. That's a good old boy. Yeah, that would be. The thanks, Pray, too. Republicans would go nuts, wouldn't they? They would set themselves on fire. They would do something rash and reactionary. If the idea of the workers taking over the oh, God. I mean, hasn't everything in this country for the past 150 years at least, the past 100 years, been geared to stopping just that? The means of production in the hands of the workers? Wait a second. Let me see here. Means of production in the hands of the workers. Where is that? Oh, yeah. It's right here in the Marxist handbook. Ooh! Oh, no! Well. Let's do some phone calls while we're... I'm trying to figure out what to do with the rest of the program. Starting with Eric, who's calling from Des Moines, listening on Sirius. Hey, Eric.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right.
Good
how are
evening,
you,
Mike? Oh, I'm doing well, thanks. Just slaving away here in Iowa.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm a registered independent. I don't really trust the left or the right. I think the whole Washington is corrupt, but. I'm sure I'm not the only one. Hey, my comment for this evening is in regards to the GM and the Ford bailout.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that we should help them out at all. And the reasoning is obviously they don't know how to run a company. And I think the huge issue that they're having is they need to get rid of these unions, because I think the unions are the ones that are causing all the issues.
You are kidding me, right? I mean, you really don't believe that. You don't believe that the unions have caused all the problems.
Okay. All right. I'm not saying that.
Let me ask a couple of quick questions here. Uh-huh. Do the unions plan the design of the cars?
No.
Do the unions decide on the price of the vehicle?
Nope.
Do the unions make executive decisions about how the vehicle will be advertised?
Nope.
Do the unions have any input where it concerns switching over from internal combustion engine to something a little bit more environmentally friendly?
Nope.
Okay. Wait a minute. I'm not finished.
Okay.
Do the unions give back over and over and over again what they have gotten in terms of collective bargaining, say, over the past 10 years?
I'm not one.
Yeah, the answer to that is yes. How, then, are the unions responsible?
All right. For example, say you open up your business, right? And
Let's stay focused. I'm going to insist you stay focused. Don't give me any... hypotheticals, as they say, Eric. Stick to the auto industry. How are the unions at fault?
All right, well, the average wage of a union auto worker is, what, $137,000?
If you figure in all the bonuses of the members of the UAW, it works out to about $70 an hour. You figure a 35-hour work week. You figure, how much is that?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, well, no, the guy standing behind you. Yes, I'm asking you.
Well, when I was looking on one of their websites, it said that the average UA worker made roughly around $137,000.
Okay, well, is that a bad thing?
Well, it all depends on what kind of work they're doing. I mean, I don't think it's right for in a.
Well, let me ask you this: how much do the executives make?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm
okay.
Sure.
Well, the head of Ford, the CEO of Ford, I believe his name is Mullally. made $14.7 million last year. How does that, what has he, did he make a car?
No, but he's the CEO. He's the chief executive officer.
Yeah, and what has he done? How's that job working out? What has he done with Ford Motor Company?
Yeah, exactly. He's running.
No, Eric, not exactly. Not exactly at all. Your thinking is really inverted. And I'm too tired tonight to try to straighten you out. I really am. I couldn't begin to go down a list of reasons why your thinking is just ass backwards. So I'll just leave it at that. Thanks, Eric. I appreciate you calling.
We must fight for the cities and the farmlands, the trenches full of margarine. Wars have always been the bosses wiser.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 8 before the hour. Eric's question, I've gone over this so many times. That didn't sound right. I have, but that's not the reason I'm just not inclined to get into a big discussion with Eric. I can't fight that right-wing tide of disinformation that goes out 24/7, coast-to-coast, border-to-border. I just can't do it. I'll probably get emails now from people that say, well, Mike, you should take time with him. Now, I've said over a 20-year period doing radio, I've said I'm not here to educate anybody. I wouldn't presume to educate anybody. I'm the one that gets educated most of the time, but I wouldn't even presume to do that. That's what Hannity. Hannity will educate people. So will Limbaugh. It's all garbage and wrong, but that's their primary function. Or would you call it brainwashing? I'm not here to do that. So if Eric honestly believes that it's a fault of the unions, there's nothing I can say. I mean, wander off back into the forest and, talk to the little animals. I don't know what to say. I really don't. But Bruce in California did send this to me. It's from Tuesday's Wall Street Journal. Columnist there, Thomas Frank. He's the guy that wrote What's the Matter with Kansas? He showed in his column just how far the corporate types will go to stop workers from having the freedom to make their own decision about joining a union and collective bargaining. And this kind of gets to the heart of what Eric was talking about. But I can't tell Eric to go to a Wall Street Journal website. I can't tell him anything. I just give up. I really do. But Thomas Frank in his column quotes Home Depot founder Bernie Marcus, who is he's from here in Atlanta, right? Right, Kathy? Bernie Marcus didn't hope. Yeah. Bernie Marcus said CEOs who don't contribute to Republicans fighting the Employee Free Choice Act, quote, should be shot, end quote. That's what he says, direct quote. During an October 17th conference call about allowing workers to choose a union through majority sign-up, Thomas Frank reports Marcus as saying the following, quote, this is how a civilization disappears. I'm sitting here as an elder statesman, and I'm watching this happen, and I don't believe it. If a retailer has not gotten involved with this, if he has not spent money on this election, if he's not sent money to Norm Coleman and these other guys who oppose the Employee Free Choice Act, they should be shot. They should be thrown out of their goddamn jobs. Now, what is the Employee Free, end quote, what's the Employee Free Choice Act? That's to make it a lot easier for workers to unionize, to organize. It's almost impossible to do it now. a company like Walmart would go union in half a heartbeat. Half a heartbeat. If the free choice Employees Free Choice Act were passed. In that Employee Free Choice Act, all you have to do is, if you're a worker, fill in a card. Yeah, I'd like to join a union. Boom. Hand it into a union rep, and then they sit down with management, and they compare the card sign. I'm simplifying, but this is essentially what it is. Compare the cards and the employees' signatures, and that's it. It's a done deal. The way it's set up now, it's almost impossible, and this was deliberately set up this way. The National Labor Relations Board, unless it's reverted back to what it started out to be, is nothing more. It's kind of like the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department over the past 8-10 years. The sole function of the Civil Rights Division was to deny people their civil rights. This is you know, we're in bizarro world. We're in 1984 newspeak world. National Labor Relations Board is not about labor relations. It's about stopping people from making labor relations. So Bernie Marcus is suggesting that retailers or the bosses, the owners, who don't fight against this act by sending money to people like Norm Coleman or other Republicans should be taken out and shot. Now, he's speaking figuratively, just like I do on this program. You know, I say a lot of times, and I immediately get emails, "Oh, goddamn, Malloy is advocating that they shoot conservatives. Jesus Christ, notify the Justice Department. Call the FBI." So Bernie Marcus is doing nothing different from what I do. But to suggest, even in jest, that the CEOs who don't contribute to Republicans, a candidate, should be taken out and be shot, because if they don't contribute, if the Republicans don't win, hey Bernie, are you entering into senility? The Republicans have lost big time. Oh, that's right. This conversation was back in October. But this is the intensity that these corporate heads feel about not having the workers organize. Huh? You like that? Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. Boy, you people really got pissed off by Eric, didn't you? I'll share some of the emails here in a minute. But back to Bernie Marcus, who, the founder of Home Depot, who said that CEOs who don't contribute to Republicans should be shot. And it's all about the Employee Free Choice Act. The one thing that corporate America is terrified of, the only thing, is organized labor, collective bargaining. Unless they want to move every single one of their goddamn factories out of the United States. I guess they could do that if they wanted to. But collective bargaining, as somebody sent me an email last week or earlier this week that pointed out that union membership has always been a bulwark against fascism, and that's very true. I've made it very clear my positions on unions on this program over the past 10 years, so there's no doubt where I stand. But the Employee Free Choice Act would restore a workers' freedom to form unions and bargain for better wages and benefits. And it will level the playing field that right now leaves all the power in the hands of corporations, not workers. Right? According to Thomas Frank's column, big business, and the front group set up by corporations to fight the Employee Free Choice Act, just like they set up 16 years ago to fight against universal health care. Remember Harold and Maude, who is the woman in the ads, Kathy? Harold and, whoever it was. But anyway, big business and the front groups being set up by these corporations are going to spend anywhere, whatever it takes, but about $200 million is already in the propaganda and lobbying till to block the passage of the Employee Free Choice Act. As Thomas Frank points out, Marcus, this is James Park, one of the blogger who wrote this. I'm sorry, I've been crediting most of this to Thomas Frank. It's James Parks who wrote this. He writes, Marcus, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and big business are out of joint because working families won a strong victory on November 4th, electing Obama president and picking a stronger pro-worker majority in Congress. However, winning an election isn't the end of the fight. Now the elected leaders have to tackle the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, and a big part of economic recovery must be to ensure broadly shared prosperity, you know, spread the wealth, and to rebuild America's middle class by enacting the Employee Free Choice Act. Now, Frank wrote that the issue is power, plain and simple. Frank cited employers' routine use of forced attendance meetings with workers in preparation for elections. You know, if a union organizer comes in and you work in a non-union shop and your employer says, all right, get your ass into these meetings where we're going to brainwash you, you don't have any choice. You got to go. The employers use threats to shut down the factory or the plant or the retail outlet if workers win their union. And they reward anti-union employees, and then they fire the union supporters. I mean, this is just so common. This is why I say National Labor Relations Board has turned into nothing but just useless. Useless. Walmart CEO Lee Scott, at a meeting October 28th, when he was asked about the possible coming of the Employee Free Choice Act and the fact that all you have to do is fill in a card to vote for union representation. This is what Lee Scott, the Walmart CEO, said, quote, we like driving the car and we're not going to give the steering wheel to anybody but us, end quote. it just goes on and on. You can check this out. Just go to a UAW site, go to Employee Free Choice Act. You'll find it. But Bernie Marcus, what a son of a bitch! You know, anybody who doesn't contribute to, I mean, it's one thing to be a Republican or a Democrat. You know, I frankly don't give a damn. But to make that kind of a statement, any CEO or any a manager, any company, any retailer who doesn't support Republicans regarding this Employee Free Choice Act should be taken out and shot. Or thrown out of their goddamn jobs. Nice, Bernie. How much did you make last year and the year before that and the year before that and the year before that, huh? Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? All right, now, you know, when the guy Eric called in about, you know, the $70 an hour, look, I understand what that $70 an hour means. It's not $70 an hour. I understand that. But Reg writes in that $73 an hour figure includes laborers' wages of about $29 per hour, plus benefits, pensions, and the cost of providing health care to more than 400,000 GM retirees. It's not an hourly wage for the people who work in the factories. It's a conglomerate amount, but is used as a union-busting mantra to make it seem that auto workers live far too good a life. $70 an hour for a 40-hour work week would come to an annual salary of more of $145,000 a year. Bull crap. That's not happening, Reg. Yeah, and Eric obviously listens to right-wing talk radio, and he hears Limbaugh or Hannity talk about, well, you know how much the average auto worker makes? They're making $73 an hour. And it's bandied around in the press. You can see it in the New York Times. And the Times will make kind of a half-assed effort to explain what Reg just said. You know, it's not, they're not paid $73 an hour for their labor. That's everything. And I'm sure that workers, as well as company owners, would love to get health care someplace other than as a responsibility of the employer. But this is the part I don't get. Employers constantly bitch and complain about the cost of doing business in America, but they won't. Well, you know what it is, I guess. It's just corporate, it's professional courtesy. You know, the corporate managers of the auto industry don't want to screw their buddies, the corporate managers of the healthcare industry. I guess, I don't know. I'm getting to the point where I don't care, because healthcare, single payer is coming to this country. It will come. Because if it doesn't come, the company or the country is going to go bankrupt. We're just all going to lay down and die. Seriously. Pamela in Tennessee says, Mike, tell Eric, consider trying to figure out ways to get rid of the auto union because they make more than you do, Eric. Maybe you should ask yourself why you aren't a member of a union where you work. This attitude illustrates beautifully the ability of the right wing to get people to vote against their own best interests every time. Poor, misguided things. Pamela in Tennessee, and Stu in Madison, Wisconsin. Mike, there are plenty of folks that work on the line in the auto industry that make anywhere between $14 and $17 an hour. Sure, fringe benefits bring up the total cost, but many people do not make that kind of money unless you figure in fringe benefits. Well, yeah, that's the whole point. But I just don't have the patience to explain that to somebody like Eric anymore. I just don't, you know? I don't. Because it's a waste of breath. Total waste of breath. Who's Eric going to believe? Some nighttime talk show host that he hears on Sirius Satellite Radio like me? Or is he going to listen to the kind of brainwashing propaganda that is spread coast to coast, border to border, 24/7 by the 98% of talk radio that is complete right-wing reactionary pro-Nazi? So... well, we have, I have another. Oh, God. All right, put him on. John is calling from Phoenix. John, listen, I'm serious. You don't believe unions brought down the big three. You don't believe that, too, do you?
Well, I think they contributed to the downfall.
How? Tell me how.
Well, charging an above-market rate for their labor.
No, wait. What do you mean above-market rate for their labor? What the hell are you talking about? What's the market rate for labor?
Well, if you ask Toyota or Hyundai.
No. Come on, don't do this. I'm going to give you a chance. What's market rate for labor? Now, screw Toyota and Honda. We're talking about Ford, Chrysler, and GM. What's market rate for labor?
Whatever the market will bear, whatever the employer will work for.
Oh, really? Is that what it is? Wrong. It is not whatever the employee, who will work for, the employee will work for? Is that what you said?
Exactly.
Have you never heard of collective bargaining? Let me ask you something. I don't know what you do. Don't tell me. I frankly don't give a damn. But if unless you're in business for yourself, if you're working for wages, who do you want to determine your wages? Do you want to determine them with the other people who work in your industry? Or do you want a boss to say to you, this is what you're going to be paid? What do you want, John?
No, Mike.
No, answer that question, or I'm going to move on. Just answer the question. It's a very simple question. Don't weasel out. Do you want to make a decision if you work for wages about how much wages, or do you want the boss to?
Well, obviously, I would like to choose my own wage.
Well, then, you're pro-union.
Not pro-union. As an above.
Well, what do you call that?
What?
No. John, don't go wobbly on me. Don't revert to Limbaugh talk. What do you call that? If you want to set your wage, if you're a wage earner, along with the other people in your industry, what do you call that?
Well, that's just greed. That's self-interest.
Greed?
Self-interest.
Oh, my God. Okay, John, I got to go. I can't do it, pal. I can't do it. Sorry. Goodbye, John. Greed? How about just making a decent living? What the hell is wrong with you people? How do you people get so goddamn brainwashed that you believe that a worker who wants to bargain collectively, who wants to make a decent living wage, who wants certain fringe benefits like a 40-hour work week, paid vacation once maybe 2 weeks a year, a couple of holidays off, sick leave, you call that greed? Jesus Christ. Do a break.
And a union father, and a union mother, way over in that union burying ground. Well, I'm gonna sleep in a union coffin. I'm gonna sleep in a union coffin, way over in that union burying ground. Every new grave brings a thousand new ones. Every new grave brings a thousand members, way over in that union burying ground.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
23 past the hour. All right, a couple more emails here. Donald over in Augusta, Georgia writes about Eric. Mike, every time I hear one of these goddamn brain-dead idiots, I understand why an imbecile like Bush ends up in the White House. In a rational thinking world, he wouldn't even be elected dog catcher. Just to inform the uninformed Eric, the wage listed for a UAW worker consists of the total compensation package, which includes wages, health care, and other compensation. For this moron to defend the CEO making $14 million, for a business on the verge of bankruptcy and then blame the union worker just shows how stupid he really is. At what point will these brainwashed fools finally get it? I know in his little mind he thinks he will one day be the CEO making the big bucks, but in reality he is so stupid and uninformed he'll never make, he'll never make what the union worker makes. You and I live in the state of Georgia, so you can imagine how many times I've had to have this conversation. At a time where Wall Street and the rich fat cats have looted our treasury, and us by extension, this slow-witted, Kool-Aid-drinking moron is still dribbling out this right-wing crap. I mean, these people are so stupid and willfully ignorant, it's a wonder they know how to put one foot in front of the other to get anywhere. The most corrupt, backward-thinking republic in a district with the likes of Eric voting will never lose a seat, thanks to those people who are totally incapable of critical, rational, logical thinking. I mean, what the hell? Okay. Now, Jonathan Cohn, writing at the New Republic, and this came out online, this came out today, debunking the myth of the $70 per hour auto worker. Just very quickly here, Cohn writes, let's start with the fact that it's not $70 per hour in wages. Eric, if you're still listening, which you're probably not, try to get the Limbaugh-ese out of your ears and just listen to this, okay, please? All right. Start with the fact that it's not $70 an hour in wages. According to Kristen Dizek of the Center for Automotive Research, and that, by the way, I believe is University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, who was my primary source for the figures you are about to read. Average wages for workers at Chrysler, Ford, and General Motors were $28 per hour as of 2007. $28 per hour. That works out to a little less than $60,000 a year in gross income. Hardly outrageous, particularly when you consider the physical demands of automobile assembly work and the skills most workers must acquire over the course of their careers. More important, and contrary to what you may have heard, the wages aren't that much bigger than what Honda, Toyota, and other foreign manufacturers pay employees in their U.S. factories. Well, we can't be sure precisely how much those workers make because the companies don't make the information public. The best estimates suggest the corresponding 2000 figure for these transplants that come to this country, that's what the foreign-owned factories are known as, the salaries are somewhere between 20 and 26 an hour, and most likely around 24 or 25. That would put the average worker's annual salary at 52,000. That's Honda, Toyota, and the rest of the foreigners. 52,000. The average Chrysler, Ford, and General Motors, 60,000. So the wage gap, per se, has been a lot smaller than you've heard. And this is no accident. If the transplants paid their employees far less than what the big three pay their unionized workers, the United Auto Workers would have a much better shot of organizing the transplant factories. Those factories remain non-unionized, and management very much wants to keep it that way. Now, it's a much larger, longer article. You can check it out online. Couple more here. I hope I'm not boring you. Time for a break? Yeah, it's time for a break. Kathy wrote, never mind seeing whether corporate execs donated to Republicans or not, just shoot them all. That way the guy who made the statement will get his wish, and the rest of us will get ours. It's a true win-win situation. All right, we'll be back. I'm going to share one more with you from Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. This is the Malloy Program on Nova M.
Next door, I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you. They arrested the mayor for an illegal favor, sold the Empire State to Japan. And Oliver North married William C. Corden, gave birth to a little Tehran. And the Ayatollah aboard a nuclear warship, if he dies, he wants to go out in style. And there's nothing to eat that don't carry the stink of some human waste dumped in the night.
Your host for a Pence, Friends future, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Michael in Roswell writes, General Motors themselves say that their labor rate, combining straight labor charge, health benefits, pension contributions, is $81 per hour and change. They do not say if this is the conformed labor rate, which is those above items, plus overhead. Now, most manufacturers these days are averaging about 20 hours labor per mid-sized, normally equipped car, which might carry a wholesale cost of $14,000 and a retail price of $19,000. General Motors has, ever since the early 90s, been blaming the workers for their problems, and yet studies by the Transportation Center, University of Michigan, at that time, showed that GM's production labor hours per car were more than double that of other manufacturers because of the way the vehicles were designed. It's easy to obscure the truth with a statistic. What that really means is that all wages and benefits to produce each car is normally about 11.5% of the wholesale cost. Energy use accounts for almost 25%. But if the manufacturer can cut those wages and benefits in half, that's an over 5% increase in the bottom line, in the profit, without having to make other structural changes. It's the easiest way to greater profitability and hides a multitude of other inefficiencies. I guess that if you're a non-union worker in a so-called right-to-work state, making $8 or $9 an hour, you are going to think that UAW guy taking home $60,000 to $70,000 per year with overtime is getting more than his share. The non-union worker has been conditioned by his employer to think that way and to think that the union is the problem. Yeah, thanks, Michael. I don't know why. I mean, I do know why, but I don't understand the process by which people come to the conclusion that collective bargaining or union labor is a problem rather than about the only damn solution that this country's ever had where it concerns putting the brakes on predatory capitalism. If capitalism had its way, if the bosses had their way, we'd still have child labor laws. I mean, still have child labor with no laws. There would still be 9-year-olds going into the mines, 12-year-olds going into the factories. But like so many aspects of the so-called cultural divide, you want to call it that, in this country, the people who don't understand the concept of collective bargaining or union membership are unreachable to me. I can't do it because I just want to call them dumb sons of bitches and walk away from the discussion. I don't have the patience anymore. I really don't. I can't understand how anyone doesn't understand union history in this country. Where did these dumbasses think the middle class came from? Jesus? The only reason there ever has been a middle class, so-called, in this country is because of unions. I mean, I can go down the list and I'm not going to bore you with it. We only do this on Labor Day. But the monumental ignorance that is constantly stroked and fed by these right-wing sons of bitches in talk radio. Like I said, 24/7, coast to coast, border to border. It never stops. We live in a brainwashed society, just completely brainwashed. So I appreciate the emails because I can't do it. You know, I simply cannot. I get somebody with that point of view who calls this program, and I just, you know, I give up. I can't do it. I can't fight against that. I can't even sit back and explain it. Not anymore. Sorry. What a shame that people believe that, you know, that they don't understand the history of collective bargaining in this country and what it really means. They're willing to pollute their minds and destroy their ability to understand their own history by listening to the Hannitys and the Limbaughs and the rest of these pigs. Oh, well. What you going to do, right? Back to your phone calls. Mark is calling from Washington, listening on the Internet. Is that Washington State or D.C.?
Washington State.
Okay. Hey, how you doing, Mark?
Hey, good. How about you? You know, here we are, we're talking this bailout again, and we're looking at giving billions to the company, the auto companies. And, you know, I really like that idea of giving the bailout in the form, like having GM or Ford and Chrysler issuing $25 billion in stock and mm-hmm. then handing it all over to the workers and giving them the control. I give it to the workers and take it away from the toss, as we call them in England.
Yeah.
You know, in the last bailout was the $300 billion to the banks and stockholders. And once again, just like today, they're blaming unions today for GM's problem. And there they were blaming the little guy who took a mortgage on that he couldn't handle.
Right.
And, you know, if you sat down and worked it out, you know, there's $12 trillion outstanding in U.S. mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
And about 9% of them are late a payment or so.
Right.
And 3% are in foreclosure.
Right.
And if you take an average 6% mortgage and you do the math on it,
mm-hmm.
it works out that with $22 billion a year, we could pay the mortgages, we could make the payments on all the foreclosed mortgages,
mm-hmm.
and for about $60 billion, we could make the payments on the ones that are a payment or two behind. That's a heck of a lot less than the $700 billion they are talking about giving to the banks.
Right.
You know, it would sort of be like a student loan program for people with bad mortgages. Here, we'll keep you going through these hard times, and when, you know, things get better, we'll get money back from you.
But the problem is bigger than that. See, we have been sold, Mark, you and I, and the rest of the American public, on the hideously misstated belief that subprime mortgages are what has caused this global economic meltdown. The subprime mortgages, so-called, are part of the problem. Yes, there's no denying that. But it's these I don't even know what they're called. These instruments that were invented by the banking industry that mean nothing. These
derivatives.
Derivatives. All of these so-called instruments that are used to spread around risk, they create risk. The hedge funds. Well, the hedge funds not so much, I guess, because when hedge funds come due, they have to be paid. But yes, hedge funds. Goddamn, it is just so out of control. But it's been put out of control by the masters of the universe, these financial wizards who decided, well, look, you know, this is going way too slow. My bonus last year was only $6 million. I've got to get it up because if I don't, my old lady's going to leave me. So I got to get $10 million this year. No offense here with the sexist remark, but you know what I'm talking about. You know these kind of guys. So they invent something that even the economists don't understand. Nobody understands how these new financial instruments work. All they know is a lot of people bought into it based on the faith of the banks selling them, and that's the reason we had the meltdown. All of a sudden, nobody believes the banks anymore, not even other banks. So that's the end of it.
You know, Mike, if you at one point when the derivatives for oil were at $150 a barrel,
mm-hmm.
J.P. Morgan owned 40% of the world's production of oil for that year. Now, all of a sudden, it's worth $50 a barrel. So somebody's lost $100 a barrel, and they didn't put up any money for it. So, you know, that somebody's got to pay for that. And that's where I suspect that the $750 billion is coming in.
Well, it damn sure is not going, it's obvious, it's not going to rescue or bail out anyone. It is being absorbed into a black hole that's going to take another trillion or two just to fill up the hole before they can really get to the problems that we're dealing with. It's a con job. It's a skin game. It's a three-card Monty on a monumental scale. And the ever-willing American taxpayer is the one being doused in a can of kerosene for this one. We're putting our kids in hock and our grandkids in hock. There's no question about that. They are doomed to pay off what these goddamn baby boomers set up for them back here at the beginning of the 21st century, and it's going to go for another 60 years. It's just, I don't know, Mark, it's just insanity. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Makes me crazy. Just absolutely crazy. And the reason it makes me crazy, to the point where I feel my throat seizing up, where I just can't talk about this stuff anymore, because it is so blatantly obvious what the solutions should be and how the problems could be avoided or could have been avoided and could be avoided in the future. It is so blatantly obvious and apparently so simple to me. And the simple solutions and the blatantly obvious is both are totally ignored, and that's why I get to the point where I can't even talk about this.
Don't sell that old cow for a car. You might want to stay right where you are. Take a little advice from me. Because I read the one ads every day. The voices in the paper always say, if you ain't got the do-re-mi, boy, if you ain't got the do-re-mi, you better go back to your beautiful Texas.
Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, a couple of emails here. Subject line says, Joe the Plumber versus Eric the Airhead. And it's signed Pete the Pothead. Pete writes, I've spent upwards of $150 a week on ganja simply to maintain short-term memory loss. God forbid I ever have to connect all these dots. 6 weeks ago, Joe the Plumber was nearly irate that Americans who made a scant quarter mil a year might have their taxes raised. Utterly un-American. Now Eric suggests that $170,000 a year is much too much. In better times, I'd pay $10 to watch Eric and Joe sort through their differences. Pete the Pothead. Kathleen from Austin writes, Mike, I heard a good argument about unions. The corporate executives have contracts, so why shouldn't blue-collar workers? In fact, this is the best argument for every worker to belong to a union. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, what kind of a slogan do we need? We have to hang together or we'll hang separately. All for one, one for all. You know, I mean, you can look at history, drama, art, music, wherever you want to look, and you find the same message: stick together, or it's your ass. You know, and you'll be out there on your own. Don writes, I want to thank you so much for standing up for the UAW. I have over 30 years in General Motors. And I have never in my life seen so many people hope that a company goes down and put so many out of work. Of course, it's the unions. It's always the unions. I work 40 hours a week, and at the end of last week, I made, for the year, $63,237. You know, Mike, it sounds to me like they want to get rid of the rest of the middle class. Thanks, I enjoy the show. Don. Linear Bob writes, Mike, I think what we see here is a result of a general dumbing down of our schools in the mid-50s. I remember learning about the labor struggles that resulted in the 40-hour work week. I also remember the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire and how many of the very young female workers there died because the exit doors had been chained shut. That deadly fire came 2 years after there had been a wildcat strike there, prompted by their poor wages and working conditions. Eric and John, your two callers, are poor, benighted souls who obviously never heard about collective bargaining or what a union is. Their ignorance of history is so obvious it's painful. I'm surprised you were as patient with them as you were. I would have asked them both what they learned in American history classes in high school. Well, they both sounded like they were in their 20s, so probably nothing. American history is not taught anymore. It really isn't, and I don't, you know what I mean by that. Yeah, I've said before, when I was in high school, I learned about Harry Bridges and John L. Lewis and Walter Reuther and the gunning down of workers wanting to unionize in Chicago, the thugs that were sent into the River Rouge Ford plant by Henry Ford II or the First or the Ninth or whatever, the goon squads to beat up workers who simply wanted to organize, on and on and on and on. And I just, I can't do it. I can't explain to people about unions. Back in the day, you didn't have to explain to anybody because, maybe 25% of the labor force was unionized. What is it now, 6%? I think it should be 100%. Well, whatever. There are some professional trade groups that surely don't need unionizing, but I'm talking about us common folk. I'm a member of a union. But when it gets to factory labor, manufacturing, what's left of it, farm labor, of course it should be unionized. Oh, man. But trying to explain it all to people who don't have a clue, it's just, can't do it. Can't do it anymore. Can't do it. Back to your phone calls. And we'll pick up when we come back after the break, too. Karen is calling from Olympia, Washington, listening on the Internet. Hey, Karen. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, honey. I love you. I love you, Kathy. I love you, Molly.
Oh. Well, you don't have to add the Kathy and Molly. You can just say...
Oh, I do, too, because we run a cruise together.
No, you can just say, I love you.
I love you, baby.
There you go. All right.
Listen, have you ever heard of Robert Deming?
Who?
Robert Deming.
Deming? I don't think I have.
D-E-M-I-N-G.
No, I don't think I have.
He introduced efficiency in the American government.
Efficiency?
And he was exercised. He was not. He was rejected.
Yeah.
It was in the 50s. Google him, baby.
Okay.
He was sent to Japan. And what happened in Japan?
I don't know. What happened?
Well, they made cars. Cars that worked.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. And you know what his total thought was? That you have to have the people that do the job
be on
the committees. You have to have the people that do the work be on the committees that make the decisions.
Right. Well, that makes sense to me.
Yes. And I tried so hard to introduce that into the state government of Washington State. I've organized unions in Washington State.
Yeah.
Efficiency. The people that do the work need to be on the committees to make the decisions.
I am a complete believer in that, Karen. Whether it is, that goes back to the guilds, the forerunners to back in the Renaissance days, right? The professional guilds before unions. It goes to collective bargaining, professional associations. I agree with you, Karen. Absolutely. We'll be back after the break. If you're on hold, stay there. We're going to take your phone call. If you're not in the queue, the number here is 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Seven past the hour. Yeah, another reminder, go to the website, green960.com, green960.com to get the specifics. But I will be in San Francisco Friday night, December 5th, 2 weeks from tonight, 7 p.m. It's going to be a blowout. The tickets will go fairly quickly, and they're not that expensive. So go to green960.com, and let's get together 2 weeks from tonight in San Francisco. Let's see, now when Randy went out and did this, she wound up getting fired. Remember that?
Well, not exactly fired.
No, I'm just saying.
She got in hot water.
Well, it had nothing to do with the Green 960. I'm just saying. Who knows what's going to happen when I go out there? I just hate it because I have to, I have to break my gun down and declare it in my luggage and go through all that crap. Jesus, God. Anyway, 2 weeks from tonight, Friday night, December 5th, 7 p.m., go to green960.com and get the details. All right? Back to your phone calls on the Malloy Show tonight. Preston is calling from Denver, listening on the Internet. Preston, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. Thank you. Well, first off, I wanted to send out my regards to the good people at Fort Benning who are involved with the protest against the School of the Americas this weekend.
Right. And you understand that Father Roy Bourgeois received a letter from the Vatican that he is going to be excommunicated.
I heard you mention that the other day, and they interviewed him on Democracy Now! This morning about that as well.
Is there anything new about that? I didn't hear Democracy Now. Any updates?
I think he's going to have the right to protest it and maybe meet with the Pope. He and some allies are going to fly to the Vatican City and confront him about it. But other than that, he's going to continue his good work either way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good.
I actually had the privilege of being able to attend one of those protests about 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Really moving, really educational. I mean, to meet people from Colombia who know firsthand how they go after unions in the global south where they murder people.
Right.
Here it's mostly character defamation and misinformation campaigns from these corporate PR agents that confuse people like your earlier right-wing callers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just being overwhelmed by these corporate lawyers and rhetoricians like, Hannity and Hugh Hewitt and Medved. They're very skilled propagandists.
Mm-hmm.
And so often we're not taught critical thought, so we're vulnerable to it. At the same time, there is a lot of willful ignorance that's shameful.
Yeah, that's the part that totally upsets me. It's one thing to be propagandized. Every time we turn on television, we're propagandized.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's face it. Whether it is what passes for the headline events of the day or what they're selling between the headline events of the day on the commercials, it's brainwashing, it's propaganda, yada, yada, yada. And I think to a certain degree, we're all susceptible to that unless we are really on guard 24/7. But the willful ignorance part, that's the part that just slays me. Anybody, especially in the age of the World Wide Web now, anybody can get any information, factual information that they want. And the willful ignorance just absolutely sticks in my craw, President.
Oh, I know just what you mean. And, you know, I appreciate your patience with some of those people that call in. I know it can be fatiguing and frustrating, but I love how you handle it, and I also the contributions that your listeners make through their calls or their emails, and to just
thank God for the listeners who are willing to jump in, because what you hear is patience. To me, is just fatigue. I'm just so tired of talking to these people. I just can't do it anymore.
I totally understand that. And you know, I mean, you're there listening to these arguments, and you're getting from every angle all these, all the propaganda that they're getting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it would be impossible for you to know a response to every single, you know, approach they have. But, again, between you and your listeners, I learned so much listening to it, because I'm figuring through my own thoughts around all this right-wing. You know, again, it's PR. The public relations industry is something that people really need to be aware of, and they're mm-hmm. huge influence. In fact, Joseph Goebbels learned a lot from our own PR industry. He was a big fan of a guy named Edward Bernays, who helped to advance in corporate propaganda. He was working mm-hmm. with the cigarette industry, and he was working with United Fruit in Guatemala. Huge brainwashing campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And again,
so Goebbels borrowed from this American.
He did. Edward Bernays, who was a nephew of Sigmund Freud's, actually wrote a book called Propaganda.
Okay, now I'm remembering now. I haven't read that particular book, but now I get the connection. I can remember being told about.
Yep. Yeah. And that particular book, Propaganda, was on the bookshelf of Joseph Goebbels, and Goebbels commented on it in his mm-hmm. memoirs about what an influence it was on him.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still battling it today. I mean, again, what Limbaugh and Hannity and Hewitt are doing is elite propaganda and incredibly destructive. And but again, I appreciate your efforts to counter it. I'm actually reading a book right now called The Wisdom of Crowds, and you know, mm-hmm. it says some flattering things about, you know, the masses and how intelligent they can be versus all the, you know, negativity we hear.
Well, I'd like to read it, because all I've ever read about a crowd mentality is the lack of wisdom
mm-hmm.
or the ability to be shifted this way and then shifted that way, and the mm-hmm. danger of crowds.
You know, there is that element, mm-hmm. but there's another element. I mean, solidarity has existed, and you know, the beauty of that crowd when Obama won in mm-hmm. Grant Park and in Harlem. Those were wonderful crowds.
Oh, that's true. What's the title of it? The Wisdom of Crowds?
Yes, yes.
Okay, all right.
And so,
I'll add it to my endless list of books I must read within the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. And Mike, also, thank you for making me laugh so often. I heard you talking about Glenn Beck yesterday, and you had me in tears, what you were saying. And thanks for calling Glenn Beck out.
He's another one of these right wingers that just makes my teeth hurt. He just irritates me so bad. Preston, thanks, man. I appreciate what you had to say. Thanks for the nice words too. Stan is calling from Houston, Texas, listening on Sirius. Hey, Stan.
Hello.
Hi.
Mike.
Yes.
Know, I'm listening to all this. You know, when I was in school in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
I was the one sitting in the back throwing spitballs and everything and not paying attention in history class or civics class, but
right.
somehow it came through, you know. But of course I was able to relate it to my own family experience. My daddy was a coal miner in West Virginia,
uh-huh.
and he was involved in, his family was involved in the redneck strikes
mm-hmm.
On Blair Mountain in West Virginia, where they came across the mountain and were met by an army.
Right,
and,
right.
And they just went in and just tried to obliterate them. And they were proud of being called rednecks. They wore the red bandanas around their
mm-hmm.
necks. And I had my red bandana up until I was 12, 14 years old. So, I mean, I remember that. I carried that. My daddy was a union man, fought for collective bargaining. I have two uncles that were killed in those fights.
Good Lord.
And it was a battle, but they won it. They've been obliterated pretty much since.
Yeah, back
in the, all this right wing.
Right, crap. back in the day that you're talking about, one of the best documentaries I ever saw, I think it won an Academy Award, was Harlan County. Just Harlan County. That was the title of it. Did you ever see that? Let me put you on hold a second, Stan, because I got to do a break here. We'll come back and talk a little bit more. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
But until that morning, they're going to work you for peanuts.
The Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
Or Sarah Palin. Never mind. 21 past the hour. It's Harlan County, USA. Back to Stan, who is in Houston. Harlan County, USA is the movie I was trying to think of, Stan. Barbara Kopple directed it and won an Academy Award back in, the late 70s, I think. Anyway, where were we? Talking about the organizing the mine workers.
Right, and the mine workers in West Virginia. But, you know, my daddy was so pro-union that even though he got booted up to management and lived out his life in management, his working life, he was always pro-union and would always talk up strong on the union side. And that's one of the things, I guess, made me open my ears and when I was in class and they were talking about it.
Right.
And the thing is, I hear these people like Eric, and I hear it all the time, and I cannot believe what I'm hearing because they're just absolutely, they got those spit wads that they've been throwing around in class. They got them stuffed in their ears so they can't hear what's going on.
That's true.
Thank you for having your show. I mean, a lot of times, I don't know, you know, I would be so pent up, and then I hear you get vitriolic, and I'm saying, right on, right on, right on.
Yeah, I'm a real screamer. I just get crazy. Some of the stuff makes me crazy. I sometimes wish that I could control it a little bit better because. I know I'll tell you who it makes it rough on. It makes it rough on program directors at radio stations around the country who may be in a market where, the kind of language I use sometimes and the weird freakishness I get into, you know, then they get emails the next morning.
Right.
Say, you know, where'd you get this guy? Get rid of him. Well, mostly those program directors will stick with the program. They'll just say, look, you know, this is Malloy's show. This is what he does. If it's too rough for you to handle, you know, switch to our FM station and listen to music, you know, something like that. So anyway, I appreciate it, Stan. Thanks a lot, man.
All right. Sure. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Yeah, that happens a lot. But, you know, if we were on Sirius satellite or XM satellite exclusively, a lot of people listen to this program on Sirius or XM, but that's because they carry the program, but it originates in the over-the-air format, broadcast format. So it's, there are limits on what could be said. But Kathy and I have talked about this before. If we did the show strictly for Sirius XM, it would be. I don't know that I could do it. because I would understand that there were no language barriers. There was no parameters about what I could and couldn't say, insofar as you know, being lazy and sloppy, which is what you are when you cuss or use curse words.
But, you'd give Lynn Samuels a run for
no. Me. Nobody can give.
Oh yeah. Oh my God! All did right. You see?
No. Nobody can give Lynn Samuels a run for her money.
Oh my God!
Yeah, we just don't use.
I can't ever believe these people.
Just. Don't use the F word.
It's my Lynn Samuels impersonation.
Yeah, well, that's pretty good. That's
those
pretty good.
Of you who have not heard her, it's unique to anything your ears have ever witnessed.
That's very true. That's absolutely true. Josh is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Where's Josh? There he is, listening on the mic. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fair to partly cloudy.
Actually, I've been on hold for a while, so I wanted to condense my argument. I was wondering, basically, I don't know if I have a chance to give a little background. I worked in the tangential industry, like you spoke of, for a repair facility, corporate entity, repairing cars. I worked for a used car dealership, a new car dealership, and in the parts industry. And actually, I married into a family who my father-in-law used to work for will be a former employee of the Janesville plant in Janesville, because they're of course closing down.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It just kind of, to me, the way that I see it now is that I actually read an article. It was a long time ago. It was back when I was still in high school. It was about how, you know, why is the automotive, the American automotive industry, trailing the Asian industry at the time. And this was in 93, I want to say.
Hey, Josh, actually, Josh.
Yes, I'm sorry.
No, let me get you to hold on a second, because I've only got about 10 seconds here, and I'm going to have to go to a break. And I'll come back right after the break and pick up the conversation, because, you know, we want to hear what you got to say. And everybody else is on hold. Stay there. We still have a half an hour of the program left. We're going to try to get to as many callers as we can tonight. So do stick around. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Molloy. Stay with us.
No one left to let you back now. No one's standing at your door. That what you thought love was for. Maybe you're lost. Maybe you're lost. Maybe you're lost. God. I'm tired of fighting.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Molloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Well, that was cool. During the break, Kathy was playing some music from Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Who are we talking to? We were talking to Josh in Madison, listening on the mic. Okay, where were we, Josh?
Well, I was just, like I said, I guess what I was talking about is that I've been involved in the automotive, you know, like you said, the tangential automotive industry for basically most of my early adult life.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I even have a tech school degree. I'm not a PhD by any means. But I'm kind of a car guy, quote unquote.
Right.
But the overlying thing that I wanted to bring up was that it's not really necessarily, I mean, maybe it is kind of political, but I don't know if it is. I had read a paper, I don't know if it was, I don't remember what publication or who the author was at the time, but I mean, like I'm talking about, this is probably 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
about what was the overlying reason that the domestic car industry was kind of falling behind the Asians at the time, was the question. Because at the time, I think this was pre, you know, Asian collapse, you know, where they had their economic issues.
Oh, when Japan did, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, the entire, yeah, the whole, mm-hmm. that whole part of the world had a problem, but they were talking about how, I mean, and I don't know what you believe about this, but they were talking about how, and Germany too, they were talking about how Germany and Japan, post-World War II, had a, you know, there's basically the treaties that they signed, they basically said they cannot have an offensive standing army,
mm-hmm.
You know, they can't attack anybody, more or less, and, mm-hmm. I mean, they can have defensive forces and all that stuff, but a lot of their good minds go into, instead of going into, like, here we have a lot of our engineers and stuff, and at the time maybe this was the case, a lot of our good minds go into the weapons, surveillance, mm-hmm. aerospace, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And that's still probably the case today, I would think. I mean, maybe there's not a lot of money in going to the automotive industry. Maybe that's part of the deal. But
You're talking about the people who could come up with innovative ideas were siphoned off in this society into the weapons or defense industry.
Right. And then in those countries, they don't have that same, they don't have the same stake in it. Their best minds, their best engineers,
mm-hmm.
Go into the automotive industry.
Right.
And they, and maybe that's one reason why, and this is, like I said, 15 years ago, I want to say that they were discussing this then.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I understand it's not necessarily poignant today, or maybe it is, but that's what they were discussing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering how that's, and I just look at that now and how prescient that was, and how, yeah, why do we, what is the motivation for our best minds, our best engineers and stuff to go into that industry, whereas we could be pulling them into a domestic, you know, automotive industry, and to me, I would like American cars if they were,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, I've only owned a couple in my life, you know, domestic vehicles. Most of the time, I drive Hondas,
mm-hmm.
you know,
because they're
not only are they're better cars in terms of quality, but they're also, they seem to have more in stake for, if you like, if you're an enthusiast to coin up what everybody says, you know, they have, you know, their steering feel, things like that, their engineering seems to be more complete overall.
Yeah, and also I think their design was more pleasing, in addition to being more aerodynamic, I think the design was more pleasing to the eye. And you raised a lot of good points, Josh. I think there's probably a lot of truth in what you say about diverting engineering and technological minds in this country into sophisticated weapons production versus not necessarily doing so in some other country. That's certainly feasible. Josh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Steve is calling from Framingham, Mass, listening on the Internet. Hey, Steve.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's Friday.
I hear that.
It's been another incredibly tough week. And I called you a few months back. I'm the banker who listens to people losing their businesses.
Oh, yeah. Are you the one that told us about the credit card industry?
I told you about that many, many months ago. And
yeah.
I brought up the word depression. I think that was 6 months ago. And
yes, you did. All right. Yeah.
And all of that.
I remember now. So how are you holding up, pal?
I'd like to stick an arrow through my head is what I'd like to do.
God, it's that bad. What's going on? I mean, are you dealing on the front lines in the...
front line.
Really?
And I'll tell you how front line.
All right.
And for any other small business underwriter who's out there listening, feel free to call in and give your story. But I have a nationwide portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
I look at every single kind of business up to $10 million in revenue, every single type of business, including lawyers, doctors, contractors. The person who just called you before me,
mm-hmm.
He said he's in the auto industry.
Right.
I have so many auto repair shops, gasoline stations, convenience stores, going out of business all throughout the entire Midwest, the Mid-Atlantic, hundreds of them. In my portfolio alone, I want to just bring up two or three phone calls that I got in the last week, and that's why the arrow, I want to stick an arrow through my head. Terrible phone calls. The one phone call I once told you about was the woman on Cape Cod who was losing her real estate business after 20 years, and it was the one phone call after I've been doing this 28 years that I thought after she hung up that she was going to commit suicide. Now, I've had two phone calls of the thousands that and I renegotiate, by the way, mm-hmm. many of these loans. And any banker who tells you, anybody who tells you that a bank loses money when they renegotiate, that is incorrect. I do it for a living. I do it every day.
Do you have to work within guidelines that?
Absolutely.
That your bank, your lending institute, what is it?
Yeah, the institution and the industry, they have guidelines.
They have certain guidelines, right?
And you can't
deviate.
Because I'm a human being and a Democrat doing this.
Right. God.
Yeah. Right. Well, for instance, today, just in the last couple of weeks, this one phone call from Buffalo, New York. A gentleman in his 50s with an Italian accent. He has a restaurant that he's had outside of Buffalo, New York for the last 20 years. He's got 24 tables. He makes, good revenue up until recently. He's got a family and everything else. He has employees. He's losing that business. Mm-hmm. He owes us $100,000, and I couldn't fit him in. I tried. Mm-hmm. I tried my best. I do everything I possibly can and more, and I couldn't fit him in. And, he told me the story that he went from 24 tables down to 12. He went from 7 days a week down to 5. Then he went from all day down to just dinner. And this is the kind of guy who is so proud of what he does. You could tell. He's a first generation American. Mm-hmm. He's made it up till now. Because there's so many businesses around him that have lost people, he's
right.
going out.
Right.
That is America, and the pain is unbelievable. And he told me he is going to have to get an entry level job.
Mm-hmm.
And he's my age. He's in his. I'm 52. He's in his 50s.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts me. It hurts me to hear that.
Oh, sure.
Physically and mentally and in every other way, because he has a family. Mm-hmm. And when I listen to congressmen, and it just makes me sick because they have no idea what they're voting on. The second, another one that I want to tell you about.
Mm-hmm.
Is a guy in Chicago, an automotive repair shop. He probably had 20 or 30 employees. Not only did he have the repair shop, he also has a car wash on the side. And he has two, he grew it into two or three locations.
Mm-hmm.
He's going out of business. He owes us $200,000. I tried to fit him in. And that also didn't work. And what I mean by fitting in, some of these loans are interest only. They're not subprime. And
right.
for those right-wingers that call you, these are the guys. Look, these are tough guys. They've earned everything. They've gotten nothing from anybody. They've busted their backs for their families, their kids, and their communities, and the employees that they work, that they bust their butts for to run their business. And they're going down, and they don't have control over all the bailouts. They don't have control over the deregulation over the last 30 years. They don't have control over the price of oil.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have control over those things. They lose their businesses because over things that they do not have control over. And the loss of revenue because of, like, companies like DHL. When DHL went out, I actually called Senator Brown's office, Shepard Brown, or whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm.
I called his office that day because I wanted to let his staff know that probably half the people who are going to be losing their businesses are going to be calling me.
Yeah.
Because my company actually has more small business loans in Ohio than any other bank in the country. And so they're going to be calling me.
Let me ask you, Steve, because, you know, I just know you've got horror story after horror story. How do you handle this? I hear an awful lot of fatigue in your voice. I also hear an awful lot of really, really deep disillusionment here. How are you protecting yourself from going nuts?
Well, I'm a professional, and I've been doing this nearly 30 years.
Right.
How do I protect myself? I take days off. There are times where I have to do that.
Sure.
You know, and I am, because I'm so politically informed, because I'm, that's also my background.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a very unique background. I'm politically informed. I'm a political scientist by education. Yet I've been in, the financial world my entire life. So I'm angry. I'm angry at my own party. I'm angry at the Republicans, but I'm angry at both parties. And I want to flip over to the bailout thing.
Hold on a second, Steve. I've got to do a break here. And when we come back, I'm only going to have about a minute. So see if you can get it condensed. Every time you call in, it's so interesting, but we have to fight the clock. That's the problem. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your skies. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
And I lift my glass to the awful truth, which can't reveal to the ears of you, except to say it isn't worth a damn. And the whole damn place goes crazy twice. And it's once for the devil and it's once for Christ. But the boss don't like these dizzy heights. We're busted in the blinding lights of closing time.
Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Richard Wolf, Bruce Enberg, Catherine Bay. Back to Steve in Framingham, Mass. All right, Steve, I hate to say this, but we got about 2 minutes here.
Okay. Just wanted to do the bailout on GM Ford.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. The solution is not to bail out Ford and GM. I want to see those companies say goodbye, and that's the end of it. They're the past. Because I'm sick and tired of seeing my trillions of dollars be decided behind closed doors by both parties, not know where any of that is going. I have no guarantee where it's going and who's spending it. I want to guarantee nobody's going to lose anything. I'm going to guarantee the 5 million, give me the list, 5 million workers and past workers. I'm going to guarantee their pensions, everything from my family to their family as taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get them retrained directly. And that way they go off the dole and they start working for companies that are 21st century, green energy, Prius cars, the whole bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how you do it. It's done directly from American family to American family, and they go off the dole once they get retrained and back on it. And I would guarantee every single meal, their salary, their pension, and then they get off it once they get into the new company.
Well,
that's how it's done.
This is if you were king.
You're damn right.
Yeah.
But that's how it's done, and that's how it saves my tax dollar and yours.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But it also, what it does is acknowledge the almost supreme position of the American worker. And corporate America will never do that, and neither will government.
Now, that's why we have to fight as citizens.
Well, that's true. But you know, it is workers in this country that built the country. So
Absolutely.
Much of the country was built on slave labor. I mean, literal slave labor, black labor, African-American labor, and they didn't have an equity stake in anything. They had to work.
Right.
And then that was shifted to white people. The white people built the fortunes. And then when the corporations really took hold, starting in probably the mid-19th century, right around the time of the Civil War, then all of a sudden, boom, the worker becomes a liability, not an asset, but a liability. So the problem with you know, what you just described is sensible. It's moral, it's ethical, it's proper. It would guarantee the survival of our economic system, modified a bit, certainly, but guarantee its survival. And for all those reasons, it will never happen. That's the problem. That's the part that drives, you know, and like you, this drives me crazy. Let me tell you something. I could not do your job. I could not do your job.
I invite you, Mike, to come
no,
anytime.
I could not. I, you know, the first person who called me, like the guy with the restaurant, I would say, look, be quiet about this, but I'm going to write you a check.
There's a lot of people I do save, and when we do renegotiate, and this is what gets me so angry, when we renegotiate loans, me and the seven other underwriters, we actually save most of those people, and that's how we are saving the portfolio, and that's how we should be saving every mm-hmm. single person across this country, business and residential.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, Steve, listen, don't let so much time go by, because we'd like to hear from you, all right?
All righty.
All right, thanks a lot for checking in again, and I hope you know what to do to, you know, to keep your sense of balance. Jesus, can you imagine doing that, Kathy? No, I can't either. Especially if you're like him, where it really is where it concerns you. You know, where I don't want to get too Wizard of Ozzy here, but you know, this is a guy who obviously has a heart, and you know, when you have a heart, you try to do something like that. Good God, we're out of time. We are flat out of time. If you're on hold, I'm sorry. We'll be back Monday, though, and don't forget, 2 weeks from tonight in San Francisco, Green 960 sponsoring this gig. Go to green960.com for details, and I hope to see you there. I'll see you Monday night. Take care. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, you little buttercup, wherever you are. Just like my mama said.